This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Durham's becoming one of the most diverse cities in North Carolina. So if you ask 27 writers to tell you what they think of the city, you can bet you'd get a variety of views. And that's exactly what you did get in a new collection of essays and stories and poems called 27 Views of Durham, the Bull City in Poetry and Prose. Some of the book's contributors join us today. Katie Munger is a mystery writer with three different mystery series to her name, including the Casey Jones series. Katie, welcome back. Always good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
Also joining us, Steve Shule. He is a Durham City Council member and co-founder and former president of the Durham-based Independent Weekly. He wrote the introduction to 27 Views. Steve, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
And the Reverend Carl Kenny with us as well, a pastor, novelist, and columnist in Durham, also a contributor to 27 Views. Carl, welcome.
So good to be here.
Joining us by phone from Wilmington, writer Clyde Edgerton, author of many novels, including his most recent, The Night Train. He's a creative writing professor and MFA in the MFA program at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Clyde Edgerton, welcome back.
I'm happy to be here. I miss Durham.
Well, we're going to find out why in just a minute, but I want to ask Steve a little bit about putting the book together, because I know you helped choose some of the stories. What were you looking for, some of the writing in this book? What are we looking for?
Well, Frank, first of all, I want to say that the real editor of the book was Elizabeth Woodman, who's the publisher of Eno Publishers, who did this book. And I did help, make a list of writers and that kind of thing. So what we were looking for was a wide range of views, a real diversity of genres and viewpoints and ages and ways of looking at Durham, and I think we got it.
You did, and there's the good and the bad. This is the warts and all tour of Durham,
definitely.
I'd say. And there have been other volumes of this for other areas that seem to be a little less critical in its moments.
For sure. I mean, Durham is a place that has a lot of fabulous things going on, and it's also a place where there are a lot of challenges. There's poverty, and there's all the things that come with that. And this volume has both of those things, both in the present and in the past. And so I do think it kind of catches Durham in the way that you describe fully.
Clyde, you're not in Durham now. How'd you get involved in this project?
Well, I was born in Durham a long time ago, 1944, and I watched. We used to plan about 2 weeks ahead before my family would take a trip to Raleigh. That was a big deal.
Sure, you got to feed the horses, and
yeah. We had relatives in Raleigh, so we never went to Chapel Hill. And then things started coming together. That is, the distances between the three towns started closing in. And then I left Durham to be in the Air Force for a while. I came back and lived in Durham. So I've been going back and forth to Durham all my life, and it's my home. And so I have that connection.
Last Day's Old Ballpark is the name of your contribution, and it really does seem to connect people, place, and their history all woven in one, and the unique history that's Durham's. Tell us about the piece.
Well, in 1994... A photographer, French photographer, Jean-Christian Rostani, walked into my office. I'd never seen him. He'd never seen me. He was looking for a writer. He'd come to Durham in 94 or 93 or 94, somewhere in there, and didn't know anything about baseball, went to the old ballpark, became so blown away, so infatuated that he took 5,000 photographs, and he wanted a writer. Well, my connection from the time I could walk, I went to that old ballpark from 6 miles outside of Durham, now inside Durham, a little community called Bethesda. So I would come into Durham, and I would go to that old ballpark, and I would smell all the smells, and I would see the smokestacks. And so my experience of Durham dovetailed with his angle, his infatuation with baseball. So we put a book together, which never quite got published due to Jean Chrétien's exacting needs for his artistic photography. And so I took some remnants of that book and put them together in my piece, which is a combination of fiction and nonfiction, just a little bit of imagination thrown in there.
You're talking about seeing the game with your father and yes. The number of ballparks. I guess I didn't even realize how many ballparks there were.
It's amazing. The history of baseball connects in so many ways to so much that's true about Durham. And there were some old parks way back when you could, when ballplayers made a living in minor league baseball or made money, and there was no connection to Major League Baseball. These small towns, Henderson, Durham, Greensboro, had their teams, and they were paid by the local community. And I found all that out when I was doing my research.
Katie, yours essay, interesting for a lot of reasons, not least that yours, called Best of Towns, Worst of Towns, My Town, compares your romantic relationships with your relationship with this city.
It does. It was interesting. When I was asked to do it, I decided that I wanted to do something a little bit different. And because I write fiction, I can hide behind the fiction a little bit. And I thought, well, you know, what I love most about people and I think places are their faults, really. It's what makes them unique in my book. And so I wanted to acknowledge Durham's faults and be honest about it. But I felt like if I was going to do that, I had to be honest about myself as well. So I chose the metaphor of my fear of commitment and committing to people and places.
Well, when you come out from under fiction, you come out all the way. Talk about what is it that troubles you? Tell us about that, about your journey into places that other people don't go to find out the other parts of Durham.
I think it's both fascination and being troubled by it. I think it's the invisibility of these people and places in everyday life. I mean, in my writing, too, I try to illuminate people that are otherwise overlooked or forgotten. And I believe that my fascination with it in Durham was probably shaped by my time in New York City, where it's just impossible to hide because everything's out there in the open on the sidewalks. But I had come to sort of embrace that and to see that the world was much richer, fuller, and quite different from how I grew up. So when I came back here, I wanted a place where sort of that same approach was used, and I found it in Durham.
Carl, you took a look at the people who are invisible in the open on 9th Street, where people who are homeless gather and are still, in a way, invisible. Tell us about your piece, Home is a Cup of Coffee.
Yeah, I decided to write a piece of fiction that does, in fiction, what I attempt to do in my column writing, which is to connect those parts of the community that don't understand each other. And in Durham, we have these pockets of people that don't know each other. So we have the people who hang out on 9th Street who panhandle, who have history. They come to that place out of a history of brokenness, and they're the people who come who are not from Durham, who don't understand the history of Durham. So this piece, I try to illuminate a little bit of the history of Durham and how a person on 9th Street could end up homeless and panhandling. They just don't show up in that place. There's something that causes that type of dysfunction. And so I try to connect it and at the same time celebrate that we are connected to each other through a cup of coffee.
And a history. And I think it's interesting when I compare, I think about Clyde's piece. Clyde, when you write about the people who went to those places and you evoke the vision of playing ball in those old textile leagues, all of a sudden everything comes alive. And that's what we miss when we see people who seem to be homeless or seem to be not like us. They've got a story, and it's a good one, and they would look a lot different to us if we knew what that was.
Correct.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, Katie, because you start your piece with Mary Durham, the Mary Durham event, with both Carl and I played kind of important roles. Carl famously put a ring in my nose as best man. He was the officiant in that.
But, you know, in my life.
But Carl, let's talk honestly about the conversations we had going in, because we're meeting with some very creative, very progressive, open-minded people. And right. You said this thing is too white.
Yeah, it's too white. And many of the events in Durham end up being divided by race. And those who show up who are black or who are Latino, they are disconnected from the history of Durham. So they're new to the city, and they find a love for this community because of the impression of diversity, but they're not part of that history. And so you have a divide in Durham between the old Durham and the new Durham. And so it's always saddening to me when we show up places like Mary Durham, the people who show up are new Durham, and they're white Durham. And those who are black Durham who come, they don't know old black Durham. So yeah, that's the problem that I've had.
Well, Clyde, you have a section in your piece called The Town Speaks, where you speak directly to those conflicts, challenges, paradoxes that are still very much in play and I think very much in the open in Durham, wouldn't you say?
Yes. I've been away from Durham more or less for about 10 years, so I hear exciting things happening. And certainly the racism that I grew up with is still with us everywhere. There are, however, changes, I think, that allow new connections that can be enlivening and enlightening.
Steve, what do you have to say about this? Because from your position as a city councilman, as somebody who's been interested in journalism and covering this, the city as it grows and evolves, this challenge of trying to bring people together in a real way to cross economic and class lines in ways that just doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, I think one of the interesting things about Durham is it's a city without a majority. There is no racial majority in Durham. There are some of our elementary schools now, 50% of the kindergartners are Hispanic. About 25% of our total kindergarten population in Durham is Hispanic now. So the city is changing in amazing ways, and I think in many ways we deal with this really well. I think that, you know, we get these awards in Durham for being the most tolerant city, along with being the most foodie city, that kind of thing. And so in a lot of ways, I do think that we do it well. On the other hand, we have this situation recently where with the Lincoln Apartments, speaking of city council, something we're talking about a lot there, where we have roughly 100 families being evicted all at once, predominantly African-American, almost all African-American families. Most of these people are working people. They're working for $7.25 at Bojangles, 40 hours a week. It's hard to pay a lot of rent on that. And so we have the situation where we really do have tremendous challenges in terms of poverty. And it doesn't quite match up with the cool. They're both there. But we have to make sure that everybody's being able to enjoy the new prosperity.
Well, let me go around the table and see if there's a way to link this up, because it strikes me that in this creative class, the coolness of Durham is generated by people who come up with wild ideas and make them work. Beaver Pageant, Mary Durham, mm-hmm. the truck scene, you name it. People have figured out a way to make things work. That's more or less entrepreneurial and social. Isn't there a way to link this to the political process? Have you thought about how all of that creative energy, particularly with people whose heads are in that right place, they'd like to figure this out, can't come up with a way to make these two things one?
I think there's space in Durham for a conversation related to marrying the progressive-minded political groups in our city. It hasn't happened for reasons that are very disturbing to me, where you have a powerful Durham Committee on the Affairs of Black People, People's Alliance, and an emerging Latino community, the Latino Hispanic community, that should come together in a public forum to have a conversation about what it means to marry each other, to love each other in a way that's beneficial to all these pockets of community. It's there, but it's going to take leadership around someone like a Steve to make it happen.
Well, Katie, as you had to come to terms with this, writing this piece and seeing it strictly, particularly in romantic terms, how do we make these things married? Did you have any insights or revelations as you put your piece together?
Well, the biggest insight I had is that while it may not be possible for our generation to do it, I think that we can count on younger generations. I think they are sort of naturally melding. They look across color lines. They identify with something other than that. And they're also becoming political, but they're coming political in social ways. They're becoming political online media. They're not identifying, I think, with ideology so much as values. And I like that. I see that coming. And I think maybe the people that put on the Beaver Pageant and sort of the cool hipster stuff in Durham, in a way, they're placeholders. They're creating an atmosphere where we can lighten up a little bit, where we can just get out of our skins a little bit. And gradually, organically, I think a new sort of movement will come along. And it'll be here in Durham, too, when it happens.
Steve, I want to get back to the book for just a minute. A number of writers, including I think the three others on this panel, have all written fiction that is placed in Durham. So Durham actually becomes a kind of a cool place to write about as well, huh?
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things I think about Durham when I think about our kind of literary history is that, and I tried to write about this in the introduction, is that if you think about two of the great writers that wrote about Durham, they both had to leave Durham to write about it. One of them was Ernest Seaman. who wrote a book called American Gold. He left Durham in the 1930s during a giant textile strike, where places we know now as really cool places to see art like Golden Belt were textile factories, and 7,000 textile workers were marching through Durham in the great textile strike of 1934. Seaman was sympathetic to the strike. He was fired from his position as a printer at Duke University. He left town, and it took him another 40 years to write this book, American Gold, about Durham during the tobacco days. And Pauli Murray, who you, of course, Frank, have had people on talking about before, had to leave Durham before she could write her wonderful, wonderful book about Durham. What's different, I think, now is that these writers here are able to write a truth about Durham and still be here. And I think Barry Yeoman's essay, which is one of the essays in this book, that Barry talks about Amendment 1 and the pride that he took in our city for the opposition that we had, the tremendous opposition to Amendment 1, is so different from the experience of Ernest Seaman or Pauli Murray.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Steve Shule, Durham City Council member, co-founder and president of the Durham-based Independent Weekly, former president, I should say. He wrote the introduction to 27 Views, the Reverend Carl Kenny, a pastor and a novelist and columnist. Clyde Edgerton, author of many novels, including his latest, The Night Train. Katie Munger, mystery writer, three different mystery series, of course, including the Casey Jones series. Thank all of you for being
thank
on
you.
The program
thank you.
Today.
And Frank, can I say at 2 o'clock at the Carolina Theater on Sunday, we'll be having a reading from 27 Views.
Sounds good. 2 o'clock at the Carolina Theater in Durham. Coming up next on The State of Things, we'll take a look at why we love to hate a tech ad. Stay tuned.